On this week's 51%, we speak with psychologist Dr. Jennifer Bradke about the physical and emotional impacts of stress and burnout and how you can better implement tools to de-stress.
It is essential to be able to practice these strategies while the stressors are still present, right? Recovery isn't just about taking that break. It is about creating those sustainable habits that protect our time, our energy, and just our well-being over time.
I'm Jessie King. It's all up next on 51%.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on, I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh Lita. I wasn't really in it, I didn't really get it.
You're listening to 51%, a WAMC production dedicated to women's issues and experiences. Thanks for joining us, I'm Jessie King. Last week, Dr. Ingrid Clayton taught us all about fawning and how we can set better boundaries and start standing up for ourselves. That actually plays into what we're going to talk about today, which is burnout. Burnout is a state of mental, emotional, or physical exhaustion caused by prolonged stress. It's typically talked about in the context of the workplace, but it can and does affect caregivers, moms, and activists as well. Our guest today, Dr. Jennifer Bradke, is a licensed psychologist specializing in anxiety and burnout. And contrary to what you might think, she says the key to addressing it is not getting away from all the things that stress you out, but learning how to set healthy boundaries to protect your time and energy despite all the factors that life may throw at you. It's learning how to be okay amid the stress, basically. And Dr. Bradke says there are multiple stress relief tools out there as well. To start, however, it's important to know what burnout looks like.
We can think of it as having three core features. So the first one is exhaustion, where you are feeling just emotionally and physically depleted. The second feature is the term's depersonalization, right? So we can think of it as like a cynicism or just kind of feeling detached. Irritability, that comes up quite a bit, right? We're just feeling disconnected from the work or the people that we serve. And the third feature of burnout is reduced efficacy, right? So this is where mistakes start to creep in, tasks take longer than they used to, and you just feel less effective overall. And so while you're showing up at work, you're feeling exhausted, tasks feel more effortful than they used to, perhaps you're grumpy all the time, and you feel like you should just be doing more and more and don't know how to do that in the way that you're feeling, right? And we've learned that burnout does not just happen in the workplace. It can happen to anyone, right? It happens to caregivers, it happens to students. Social activists, even volunteers, can experience burnout. Really, it's anywhere that somebody is deeply invested, but they're facing these ongoing demands or these expectations that just feel impossible to meet. Anytime that happens, burnout can start to emerge.
Well, let's launch into some tools that we can use here. How do you go about addressing burnout, both, I guess, in the lead up to it and when you're in the throes of it?
Yeah. I mean, I think just even noticing what's happening, it's easier for us to identify that this is starting to creep in and course correct earlier. It's also noticing what are the signs that we're looking for in all of this, right? So if you're noticing fatigue, that's a big one, right? That deep sense of tiredness that I mentioned, that doesn't get any better, even when we're sleeping in. Sleep itself may become a struggle. So a little bit of insomnia. So it's difficult for us to fall asleep. That's a sign. Or waking up periodically throughout the night. You might notice, I mentioned, you know, you're feeling kind of grumpy, right? So that irritability, those mood swings maybe, or just feeling kind of negative overall. Those are things that are warning signs, right? The other thing is noticing that difficulty switching off, right? I think of that as one of the things that I look at when I'm working with my clients is, are they constantly ruminating about work or about their responsibilities? Are they having difficulties pulling themselves away, right? So I think of the individual that is, you know, they're going out to dinner with their partner and they're checking work emails, perhaps, you know, underneath the table on their phone, right? And so these are things to also to just be aware of, because if we're not aware of them, it's really hard to start to intervene. And when we're looking at, you know, what are the ways, what are the things that we can do when this starts to creep into our lives, there's, I like to think of looking at it in two different levels, right? So what can we do individually? And what can we shift in the way our work is structured? And I think it's just really important to also say that we simply cannot self-care our ways out of burnout, right? There's no amount of massage or mani-pedis that is going to make this go away. What can we do individually? Right? There are things that I'm sure some of the listeners are familiar with or have heard about, and I'm also a big fan of, right? So practices like mindfulness can be a really powerful tool in managing stress effectively. You know, it doesn't change the stressor, but it changes our relationship with the stressor, right? And I often use strategies from mindfulness-based stress reduction with my clients just because it can be so effective. I think of another practice to starting to address burnout creeping in is protecting your time for rest, right? Engaging in hobbies and meaningful activities, along with staying connected to our friends, our families, our supports in general, that can make a huge difference. You know, especially in my work with clients, I'd like to help them really clarify what are their core values and then make small intentional changes in their daily lives so that their actions are more aligned with what matters most. And sometimes we find ourselves doing things that really, there's a disconnect from what we truly care about and where we're spending our time and our energy. And I think of being able to use our values in this way as kind of like a filter that helps direct where we're spending our time, our energy, or to be honest, even our money.
Yeah. So many of us end up dedicating our time and energy to things that maybe aren't our priorities for our lives. But, you know, at the same time, there's a reason that we do, and a lot of these things are needed. I mean, people need to work, they need to pay bills, the economy isn't great right now. So I guess, how do you address burnout while also making sure you're not dropping your day-to-day responsibilities?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think of people thinking about burnout and wanting to take a break from it all. That's really not realistic for the vast majority of people, right? And I think of, you know, as we talked about, burnout comes up not just for individuals at work, but, you know, in caregiving, right? Parents experience this, or if we're caring for an aging parent, those don't stop. Those things don't stop, or bills don't stop, right? And even if you can step away, I think one of the ways to look at this is that it is essential to be able to practice these strategies while the stressors are still present, right? It's really hard to master them if we're not having a chance to do it while the stress is happening, right? Recovery isn't just about taking that break. It is about creating those sustainable habits that protect our time, our energy, and just our well-being over time. And in terms of how do we start to do that while, you know, still go to work so that we're getting our paychecks or taking care of our kids, it's being really intentional. And like I said, one of the first steps that I do is talking about what is the most important thing for you? Like, what are the things that are truly important? And sometimes there are things that are more of a priority, and it's letting go of the things that truly don't matter, right? That they're low value tasks that they're engaging in, and starting to create better boundaries around that. And that can be really, really helpful. It's also starting to prioritize things like taking care of yourself, right? Prioritizing your sleep, being able to just move your body in a joyful way, right? That's also important, because when we're allowing ourselves just a little bit of time to restore, that helps us show up in our lives, you know, in a much better way, right? We're better with our kids, we're better at our jobs, right? We're able to focus more, right? Which also is helpful.
Last week on the show, we spoke about setting boundaries and how to start small and practice setting boundaries if you're not accustomed to doing that. Do you have any tips in regards to setting boundaries? Because I do feel like it's a word that we kind of just throw around now, like, oh, I need to set a boundary here or respect my boundaries. But, you know, what does setting a healthy boundary even look like? You know, what does that mean?
Yeah, you know, boundaries, that word gets thrown around all the time these days. And I think people really struggle with understanding what that is, right? Setting boundaries starts with, of course, knowing what matters most to you. And that guides those decisions about when to say yes and when to say no. But really, setting boundaries are not really for other people. They're for us. It's saying, this is what I can do and this is what I can't do. People really struggle a lot of times in setting boundaries because they feel that it's going to negatively impact our relationships, right? I think of all the people pleasers out there in the world, right? And that's really hard, right? It's like, I think that this person's going to be upset with me, or my boss is going to be angry with me, and that's going to prevent me from getting, you know, this raise, or, you know, they're talking about cuts. What if I'm that batch of employees that are seen as not being quite as productive, right? Those are real concerns. And one of the things that we don't realize is that when we're able to set boundaries, right? So having them be clear and respectful, and also sharing them with others, those things can actually help improve our relationships, right? It helps for people to understand what we can and what we can't do and support our needs. It also prevents resentment and really unrealistic expectations. So if we're not clear, we really can't do that thing. It's like, okay, yes, we're at work and this deadline is coming and we're saying, oh yeah, I can do that. And then that's completely unrealistic. Or we, you know, turn in an assignment, you know, or a report that isn't really to the standards that are expected, well, then what happens then, right? That has a better chance of creating some type of rift in that relationship than us saying, you know what, unfortunately, I don't think that that's a realistic timeline for all the other things I've got on my plate at this moment. So we can talk about, is there something that you'd like me to pause so that I can focus on this? Or I can continue moving, you know, going along as I have been. And this report is, it's not going to be ready by tomorrow, but I can get it to you by the end of the week. That's something that can help us have a better understanding and setting those clear expectations for others and what we can and we can't do.
Well, we've talked about the ways that burnout can impact your day-to-day performance, but I want to dig into, you know, why this is important. You know, we don't just live to work and be productive. What impacts can stress and burnout have on your physical and emotional health?
Oh, gosh. You know, burnout really can impact pretty much all body systems, right? When we think about it, burnout is, you know, the definition is it's exposure, right? This is this response to that prolonged chronic stress that's showing up everywhere, the body, the mind, our daily lives, right? Nowhere is safe than that, right? Because it's a source of, it's chronic stress. And what we know about chronic stress is our physical health, right? It can raise our blood pressure, right? Which puts strain on the heart. It can contribute to weight gain, right? With these hormonal changes, right? Insulin resistance, right? These chronic stressors, that's the impact that it can start to have, right? When we look at our immune system, stress in the short term can actually boost our immune system. However, when it's exposed to chronic stress, our immune system is lowered, right? And it can worsen autoimmune conditions, tension, headaches, TMJ, right? So bruxism, so that's the teeth, teeth clenching, right? Chronic pain. These are all things that can happen. Oh, and let's not forget digestive systems, right? So acid reflux, IBS, GI upset, those are really common when we're looking at this type of prolonged chronic stress. And of course, it's not just the physical stress, right? It's the impact that it has on us mentally as well. We know that burnout can also put people at increased risk for things like anxiety and depression. We just don't regulate our emotions very well when we're experiencing burnout, right? And unfortunately, we can get caught in this, it's like a vicious cycle. The symptoms worsen other symptoms, which make it even more difficult to engage in our work and these other responsibilities that we have in a productive way.
Dr. Bradke, thanks so much for speaking with us today. Lastly, and this is perhaps loosely related, but we're also just in a generally stressful time right now. Even if work is great, parenting is great, caregiving is great, we all live in a very tense country at the moment, and just the discourse online and the daily news can be stressful. What advice do you have for people during this time? I've seen people recommend limiting the amount of media that we consume online, but at the same time, we want an informed electorate. We shouldn't want people disengaging. So I guess, how do we strike the balance here and manage stress?
Yeah, you can't see me smiling right now, but I am, because I literally just had this conversation with how do you balance all of this, right? You want to be informed. These are things that you care about. And sometimes it can actually feel really difficult to just enjoy even the small things in life. And, you know, my response to that is these are things that, you know, make a life worth living. And that is so important to be able to take care of yourself so that you can also do the things that you truly care about. Being intentional, I use that word all the time. And, you know, I think it's really important, right? Why are we doing certain things? What is helpful? What serves us best, right? If listening to the news all day long is causing increased anxiety and it's making it difficult for you to be fully present in, you know, during the days, or it's causing you to really struggle with separating, right? Can you do that in perhaps a more limited way? I like to also talk about, you know, prepping yourself of like, okay, I'm going to listen to my, you know, my podcast that gives me my, you know, my news that that's important. I want to be informed, you know, prepping yourself. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is the time that I'm doing that. Checking in to make sure that you're in a place to perhaps hear things that might be a little bit upsetting or a lot upsetting. Checking in throughout with yourself throughout that, you know, what you're listening to or what you're reading. And then at the end of that, saying like, okay, well, you know, that is upsetting. Acknowledge the feelings. And, you know, is there something that you would like to do when you have the ability to do that? If so, what are some of those things so you can take action, right? There's no shortage of ways to get information these days. And it can be so overwhelming, right? And so being intentional with like, okay, I can do this. I'm going to do this for a half hour. And I'm going to take one action a day, even if it's one small action, right? Calling your senator, for example, right? Mentioned that's something that, you know, might be in people's minds, right? So how do you use your voice? It can also be surrounding yourself with your supports, being able to connect with others in an intentional way, individuals that you find supportive as well. That's another way of managing that. Setting realistic expectations for yourself. There might be certain days that, you know, you are firing at all cylinders, right? Things feel good, you feel focused. And there might be days when, you know, there's something going on in your life when it's just really difficult, and giving yourself some grace in that, allowing some kindness and compassion for ourselves is also important during these really difficult times.
Dr. Jennifer Bradke is a licensed psychologist who specializes in helping working professionals navigate anxiety and burnout. Her work is primarily based in Chicago, Illinois, and Miami, Florida. Dr. Bradke, thanks again for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed speaking with you today.
Here in New York, Democrat Assemblymember Linda Rosenthal has introduced a package of bills aimed at boosting support for women in the workplace who are experiencing perimenopause and menopause. For most of us, menopause is a fact of life as we get older. At some point, you stop having periods, and the difference in hormones results in big changes for the body. Most women will start seeing symptoms of perimenopause when your reproductive system is winding down toward its last period in their 40s. Perimenopause can be a physical and emotional roller coaster that lasts years, and as you might expect, it can make your workday more difficult. If passed, Rosenthal's bill would grant new protections for menopausal women in the workplace and require health insurance companies to cover certain treatments, too. Chantel Destra of the New York Public News Network spoke with Rosenthal to learn more.
Some years ago, I decided to try to eliminate the stigma around menstruation and periods. So about 6 years now, my bill eliminated the tax on tampons. And from there, we passed free tampons in schools, free menstrual products in schools, in prisons, in homeless shelters. I passed a law, first in the nation, which required ingredient labeling on all menstrual products and various other things, something about endometriosis, et cetera. And I thought, you know what, I tackled one end of the spectrum in a woman's life, and now it's time to go to the other when it comes to her reproductive health, and that is menopause. It's shrouded in the same kind of stigma and shame, if you will, as menstruation. And so I looked into it and I saw that as a state, there are things that we can do to help make women's health more a priority, especially when it comes to what women go through when they begin menopause, perimenopause, and menopause. So one of the bills is makes it unlawful for an employer to refuse reasonable accommodation for menstrual or menopausal related conditions. And so that means that employees would have to be provided information describing their right to reasonable accommodation and resources if they feel they've been discriminated against. The next bill is an insurance bill, requires that all private health insurers in New York State cover perimenopause and menopause care and treatment by licensed healthcare providers. The last bill so far requires the State Department of Health to create an informational pamphlet for patients with information on the stages of menopause, symptoms, and treatment options.
Yeah, thank you so much for unpacking the impetus of that legislation for us. And I'm curious, what are you hoping the lasting impact will be?
Women's health has long been considered not a priority. You know, if you look at the history of clinical trials and clinical investigations into new drugs and new conditions, they've basically all been done on white men. Now that has changed and is changing, but clearly half the population is not a white man. And so women's bodies are different than men's. And so we need a health approach that factors in everybody's issues. And now with the new federal government really kind of dismissing a lot of health issues, especially when it comes to women and diversity, I feel like it's incumbent on us in New York State to address those issues. And so, you know, there's a lot of mis and disinformation about menopause, and there's also a lack of information, any kind of information. And so my goal is to shine a light on this normal biological function and to see how we can help women in the workplace and live their lives without going through some of the pains and troubles that menopause causes.
And as you mentioned before, you've worked really hard on focusing on women's issues and having equity in the state. So how has that worked to impact the way that you've approached drafting this new legislative package?
Well, I've been in the assembly for some years now, and so I think I have a good understanding on how to appeal to a wide range of legislators, what is needed to get something passed, and how to take into account the role of the agencies and educating the public. And so, you know, I think these three bills right now address some of the glaring gaps in legislation. So, you know, for example, and I've spoken to various women who've gone through menopause or are in perimenopause, saying when they go to the office and it's too hot. Maybe it's not that hot, but for them it's hot. They need a place to go, even if it's winter, you know, that's air conditioned, for example. Or if they need to work from home that day, that's fine too, without it becoming like a big deal. You know, just as in schools, kids don't want to have to raise their hand and go to the nurse when they need a tampon. They can just go to the bathroom now and get one. Same thing. So it's not something exceptional and causing trouble. It's just normal course of events. Yes, I'm going there. It's air conditioning, even if it's 20 degrees out, my body is overheating. And the same with the various other symptoms of menopause that we need to be understanding in the state and provide accommodations.
And the first bill of the package, as you mentioned, requires insurance coverage for menopause care and treatment. So can you walk us through how a measure like this would impact women financially?
One of the treatments might be hormones, but those are not always covered by insurance. There's loss of bone, so perhaps you need medication that addresses that. Higher cholesterol, sleep disruption. Perhaps you need to go to an expert in sleep disorders. There are so many permutations of symptoms, and that's another problem that not all doctors are actually familiar with how to address the issues as well. So it's important that people can have free access, free as in unfettered. They don't have to get 10 referrals to get to a licensed healthcare provider who knows how to handle these issues.
And how are you hoping to garner support for the package while lawmakers are away for the summer and away from the state capitol?
Right. Well, you know, the session doesn't begin again until January. So there's plenty of time to speak with people. I'm speaking with colleagues, sending emails, doing some media so that people can read about it. And in general, I think menopause and perimenopause is starting to emerge in the social media sphere. So people are learning about it. And I think they'll be eager to be involved in the effort to help women going through perimenopause and menopause.
And what are the challenges that you're anticipating with getting this package over the legislative finish line? And how are you going to work to sort of mitigate those challenges?
Well, any new bill has challenges. People need to become familiar with it. But I think the fact that perimenopause and menopause affects half the population, and having a woman governor, I think will help in moving these forward. There's no reason to oppose this. Of course, insurance companies don't like to have to be on the hook for coverage of certain, you know, appointments and stuff. But, you know, that's their job to cover appointments and health-related issues. So I don't expect opposition. It's just a matter of there are many pressing issues that we always contend with in session. So making sure this rises to the top.
And if the bills are signed into law and enacted, how much would it cost the state to implement them?
Well, it shouldn't really cost the state very much at all. Pamphlet would be available online so people could download it. When it comes to insurance, you know, a lot of this is funded under Medicaid at this moment. So this is about private insurance. And in terms of providing accommodations to women, this actually leads to greater productivity. We know that once women enter perimenopause or menopause, a good number of them quit the workplace because the physical symptoms and some of the psychological symptoms make it too difficult to adhere to a strict workplace requirements. So if you don't get the day off because you're just not feeling well, or you don't get to work at home, or the office is freezing or overheated, It's hard to work there during those circumstances. So this will enable people to work better, longer, and not leave the workplace. So I think all in all, it really will be helpful to employers, employees, and the work product.
That was New York State Assemblymember Linda Rosenthal speaking with Chantel Destra of the New York Public News Network. Thanks for listening to this week's 51%. 51% is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany, New York. It's produced and hosted by me, Jesse King. Our associate producer is Madeline Reynolds, and our theme is Lolita by the Albany-based artist Girl Blue. Just a reminder that you can listen to 51% anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or wherever you get your podcasts. You can stay in the loop on all of WAMC shows by signing up for our weekly newsletter, Airwaves, at WAMC.org. We hope you'll join us next week. Until then, I'm Jesse King, 51%.
I was every single girl, I was nobody else, I was so sure of myself. I was 15 and a half, he was a hollow laugh. And I lost my cool somewhere along the way. A nightmare down the hallway, I had to learn how to look away. I lost my cool, no electricity. Hot rain on the concrete, sweet bells in little